The car business is rapidly changing, and modern car dealers are meeting the demand. I'm Michael Cirillo, and together we're going to explore what it takes to create a thriving dealership and life in the retail automotive industry. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with subject matter experts that are designed to help you grow. This is the Dealer Playbook. Gang, I'm sitting down with my new pals, Alva and Kira, which also, by the way, would make a really good band name.
I never thought of that.
Really good band name. I think you guys should consider that, or maybe a podcast.
Maybe a podcast. Could
be. From Ribbit.ai. Thank you so much for joining me on the Dealer Playbook podcast.
Oh, our pleasure. We're so excited to be here. We're huge fans.
Oh, shucks. I keep saying shucks. I'm so glad you're here, especially because this industry, as we all know, likes to latch on to buzz phrases and things. You know, one day it was big data. One day it was SEO. One day it was, you know, CDP. Of course, we're in this artificial intelligence revolution, as it were. And you have a really interesting software and solution that you've brought to auto dealers. So right out of the gates, I want to turn it over to you. Say, how did Ribbit, first of all, how'd the name come about? And tell us a little bit about what it is that you guys are doing over there.
Okay, so Ribbit is actually an acronym. It's an acronym for Reinvention Initiative Between Industry and Technology. So, you know, we wanted to provide a better service for the customers and, you know, and through our proprietary platform, you know, really make a difference with the outreach from the dealer to the customer. So in the AI, that is really the difference, you know, in what we do. And, you know, Ribbit AI is actually a self-serve platform that nets a response rate of about 72.3%, kind of like a campaigns manager in a box. Oh. But it'll drive as many sales as the dealership can handle while using the system combined with the AI to build the inventory, clean the inventory, produce car sales, as well as build exponential relationships with the dealership.
Who's the mastermind?
Well, we started in the industry selling cars.
Oh.
We started selling cars. We had a finance, a subprime finance business that we served customers across Canada. We had a small team of finance managers, and we decided that we needed a tool that could help us and our finance managers to follow up with our customers, because as we know in the automotive industry, follow-up is a huge challenge, right? So we built this this platform on our own, all self-funded. And before we knew it, our finance managers were just turning out cars like crazy. We had a couple of dealers ask us, well, what's going on? Like, what are you guys doing? So we decided that we would allow a couple of dealers to try it out. And they said, well, you know, you really need to take this to market. This is awesome. This is extremely powerful. So that's what we decided to do. And just to implement the automotive industry, kind of getting in the stores, we actually sat in the chairs of our first store. We sat there and we thought, holy crap, I hope this thing works. And yeah, soon enough, that dealer was having customers come in the door. The phones were ringing off the hook and we were getting high fives from the sales team, and they were loving it. So we just built it. We would get requests. Hey, can you add this? Can you add this feature? Can we do this? And over time, it evolved into Ribbit AI.
And when we talk AI, right? Because it's Ribbit.ai. Yes. Talk to me about your take on the narrative around artificial intelligence.
You know, isn't it? It's a thing. Hey, it's like the next the next shiny thing. And I think, you know, when people say, well, it's AI, it's like, that's such a broad term, right? Like AI can be anything.
Yeah.
And I think what we see a lot is dealers and even other, you know, technology companies in the business sort of look at AI like a, it's like a fairy godmother. Like it's just going to come in and, you know, it's going to do all these things and it's going to get people to just walk in the door and I'm not going to have to do anything. Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. AI is a tool. You wouldn't get a power tool and expect it to build your house, right? You have to use the tool properly.
Yeah. I feel like the sentiment here that I feel at least is if you rely wholeheartedly on the tool, that makes you a tool.
Yeah.
Right? Can I use right. that as a quote? Yeah, exactly. Direct quote.
Well, because isn't yes. that what happens? Our human nature kicks in and there's all this hype around AI and
yes.
all of the things it can do. And look at all these people that have made these, you know, 6, 7, and 8 figure businesses in the last 33 days using a combination yeah. of Midjourney and ChatGPT and, yeah. you know, whatever. Yeah. And I can't help but wonder when our human nature will kick in and when we will forget about all of the conversations from today. Cause like, I don't know if you ladies remember Web3, but
no, what's Web3?
That came and went. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like that came and went and we were yeah, all yeah. like, no, everything's going to be about crypto and everything's yes. going to be about NFTs and everything's going to, and what's happening? Where did it go? Nobody's yeah. talking about it anymore.
Yeah. Like
we had people trying to sell cars in the metaverse for crying out loud and, you know, wearing banana costumes. Cause that's what their avatar was wearing, dressed like a banana or whatever the heck. And so I'm wondering, you know, when it comes to a tool like yours, how much you mentioned it's a self-serve tool. Can you give me a little bit more context? What sort of intervention is required from a human being in order to get the best use out of a tool like Ribbit?
Yes. So we built Ribbit to replace the vendor. So traditionally, dealers would be paying tens of thousands of dollars sometimes per month on an outside party, a vendor that would come in and all it is really is a guy in a suit that comes in and makes your phone calls, right? So our goal was to really allow the dealer to initiate any kind of campaign within their own CRM system. All dealers are sitting on a gold mine. There's a gold mine in your database. But when it's not used, it goes to waste. And we know that it takes between 5 and 12 touch points before you convert a lead to a sale, right? But who has time for that? So our system allows a dealer with a solid data plan to initiate any kind of campaign, whether it's a buyback, trade and upgrade, CSI campaigns, or even to reach out and wish your customers happy birthday, because that's a lost art. And even when it comes from your CRM and it's an email that's all formatted, it's not going to really hit home the way a person reaching out to you, wishing you happy birthday would.
Right.
So our system reaches out. It's authentic. The customer feels that it's a one-on-one soft, we call it a soft touch, that the salesperson has actually thought of them and made that phone call. Then when the customer calls back, our system engages and carries the conversation to a close and books a phone appointment for the salesperson. So in terms of how much hands-on activity that requires, it really requires the dealer to have a solid data plan. The dealer needs to really know, okay, what's the customer journey? You know, what's the customer experience that I want my customers to have? How many touch points in a year? Is it, you know, twice a year, 3 times a year that we want to reach out to them with some sort of sales-driven initiative? So the smart dealers will have a data strategy, a full data strategy. It's not a one-hit wonder. It's not a campaign. I can't tell you how many dealers still think that even after they sign up with us, they're like, well, how's my campaign going? It's like, well, this isn't a campaign. This is your system. You know what I mean? So right. It's not a 1 month thing. It's not a 2 month thing. It's a cumulative approach that reaches out to your database and nurtures those relationships over time so that you can keep those customers coming back to you and referring friends.
Yeah, well, nurturing and engaging, re-engaging the customers as well. You know, the dealers will spend a lot of money on Facebook, and we know how much Facebook can cost us. And so they're spending all this money, trying to conquest leads. But, you know, and all they're thinking is, you know, I'm going to build my data. Most dealers don't know what to do with their data. You know, yeah. And data is a hotter commodity than gold or oil. You know what I mean? Data is very, very precious, but they don't know what to do with it. So as Kira said, you know, we come up with a data strategy. We look at all the data, bucket the data accordingly so that every customer is touched twice per year, but every customer is touched. So this is where it's almost impossible, next to impossible, for the dealer to maintain that type of touch point. And then, you know, for a series, we have a series, a follow-up series in place where, you know, it'll go for iLeads, for instance, you know, those will take probably on average 6 to 8 touch points before the customer will even get into the store. So we know that some of the stores that we've monitored, it's 1 to 2, and we've interviewed internet managers, anybody who's working on those types of leads. And they say that they're, you know, they gave up on the second one. Because there's more coming in the next day. There's 5 more or 10 more to deal with them. So they can have 300 to 500 a month. So this data is getting stale, you know, and they really don't, they need to look at their data as a source of revenue and, you know, really understand that they have, you know, how to target which particular audience, right. Because they do have different audiences and understand the trends and customer behavior. So that's what we really want them to understand. And in our proprietary system, they can see all of the activity. They start learning, you know, for instance, our service department, we ran the service oil change campaign. And the one service manager, she said, you know what, first of all, this is my assistant. Like, don't ever get rid of this. Don't ever let them get rid of this because this is my assistant. And she's really starting to understand how her customers are behaving, you know, and just by seeing everything all in one place kind of thing. So the AI is taking that customer through the journey all the way to its mission is to book the appointment. So they really don't have to do all that heavy lifting. You know, they're weeding out the customers.
Yeah. You know what it makes me think of is, I mean, as a prime example of what we're talking about here, if you're the type of individual that thinks AI is coming for your job, you're right.
Yes.
If you're the type of individual that understands AI can help you get certain reps in so that you can focus your time, energy, and talents where they're best focused, you're right. And I believe the latter group to, you know, as I'm listening to you, Alva and Kira, talk about this, I really believe the latter group is where the most vertical space for growth is.
Yeah.
Where these people, like, as you were talking about this, Alva, I was thinking, oh yeah, this is totally how I would deploy. I would have this tool. I would have AI tools help me do the things that, dare I say, are maybe not as worth my physical need.
Yep.
I would have it deploying all of those things.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to waste my time getting lazy.
Yeah.
I'm going to sharpen the blade on the things that require my best self. So what is the experience once they arrive in the store? Yeah. Am I thinking about them enough that I want to deepen the relationship? When I learn that they have kids in soccer, do I have the faculties and common sense enough to know that I should show up at one of those kids' soccer games?
Yes.
And, you know, get them the gift card for dinner. I had an incredibly horrendous car shopping experience once in Sherwood Park. I won't mention the name Sherwood Park Hyundai. And it got so bad that tongue in cheek, I was like, well, you know, my favorite restaurant's Canadian Brew House, so just throwing that out there.
Yeah,
yeah.
They didn't pick up on the signals.
Oh, no.
AI could have helped them do, like, some no-brainer stuff, but the human needed to pick up on signals too.
You have no idea. I'm sure you do actually. We get requests all the time. Hey, because our system will book a phone appointment. The sole purpose is to create engagement. You want the salespeople to start interacting and having a relationship with their customers. But we have been asked so many times, hey, can the system just book an in-store? Yeah, it can try, but you're taking away a whole, a very important, significant part of the customer journey, which is the relationship and build. And there's an opportunity in that just to have your sales team make the phone call, build a relationship, build rapport. So you want us to take that away from you? I don't know.
No, right? We're not here to try and take away the pieces you should absolutely be involved in.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
We're trying to set you up to have those opportunities.
Yeah. So we're carefully controlled with the temperature of our AI to make sure that those conversations begin. And then they can carry it through. The AI really is just, like I was going to say earlier, weeding out the people who are not interested. You know, you give a salesperson a list of 100 customers, immediately you see fatigue on their face. Salesperson fatigue, phone call fatigue. And we've seen it over and over again. And I sold cars myself. So back in 2000, I started working on the floor, sales consultant. And when I had those lists dropped on my desk, it was like, oh no. Oh, if we don't make these phone calls, we go in boardroom jail, you know, and we're locked in there and we can't, you know, speak with a customer until those calls are done. And then, you know, as you go through rejection, that's another thing too. You just see rejection on these lists right away. So, you know, the temperature is set with the AI to do a certain amount. But we call it kind of a hybrid artificial intelligence, because we still need those human conversations ongoing, you know, and that's what we're paid for. We're a salesperson. We're paid to guide that customer into an appointment, you know, like ABC, always be closing. So we close the appointment, then we close the deal when the customer arrives. And we do everything that it takes, you know, to do that, because we know that there's, you know, another 300 dealers that they can go to. So why were we lucky enough to get that customer to our store? Kind of thing. So, you know, everything is intentional with what we do. Absolutely intentional, from scripting to, you know, the outgoing messaging to the timing that it's set, the follow-up sequencing, and then of course our platform as well. It's built very simple and easy to use, and it houses everything that they've done. We have dealers just absolutely loving it.
Yeah, and I can understand why. What are some other misconceptions you've found when it comes to AI that, you know, when you start working with a new client, you have to kind of dispel that misconception so that they can make the best use of the platform?
Oh, there are so many. I think the biggest thing is they really expect it to reach into their database, filter out everything, like do all the thinking, figure out what campaign should be set. It's like AI requires programming. The human needs to tell the AI what to do, right? So probably the biggest misconception is that it's just going to come in and it's that fairy godmother kind of fantasy that AI is going to take over and it's just going to do all the work.
Yeah, AI is going to sell lots of cars for us.
AI is going to do the selling. Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, and then too, it's, you know, I want this, I want that, I want this. So when we make one change, you know, we program AI with one thing, that's all across the board. So we have to kind of put our hands up and say, no, you know, we don't want to book that appointment within the hour, because other dealers need that time. Smaller, more rural, rural dealers, you know, they're dealing with a lot. That fly that was here earlier. But, you know, they're dealing with a lot of rural clients. So a lot of that is by phone and their staff is smaller. So they're working with, you know, 2 to 3, possibly 4 salespeople. So we can't make that change for everybody. So it's kind of, we don't like to put negatives in there, but we do have to, you know, say, no, you know, that's not.
I think that brings up a good point though, because we really encourage dealers to not settle for the status quo. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, don't be afraid to, whatever service provider you're using, don't be afraid, whether it's a big one or a small one, don't be afraid to ask for what you want, for exactly sure. what you want, because many companies, even like the biggest ones out there, are building things based on those requests, right? So right. don't be afraid to ask for exactly the way you want your sure. Your technology to serve you. But
it's a quasi cautionary tale, though, right? It's like, don't be asking for things because you don't want to try and implement a better that's process.
Exactly right. Yes.
Don't ask exactly for it to right. replace your people. Cause yes. you know, what we're really, the crux of what we're all talking about here, I think, is yes, there's the tool, but yes, there's still things you must do.
That's exactly right.
Right. And if you're only making requests for new features and new things, like, yeah, as much as we'd all love to promise our tech can lasso the sun, the moon, and the stars.
Exactly.
You're still the linchpin of the whole experience, right?
Exactly.
Recently, I don't know if you've stumbled upon the Savannah Bananas baseball team on YouTube or TikTok or Reels or whatever. I would definitely check them out. We recently interviewed Jesse Cole, who's the founder of this baseball club. These guys are, not only are they good ball players, but they dance and they do all sorts of zany stuff. Like we don't want to compare them to the Globetrotters in basketball, but kind of that similar.
Yeah.
Like they'll do backflips as they catch balls in the field. Cool. They do all these sorts of things. And his point was, I'm not trying to shorten the experience. I want to make it so that people want to spend as much time with me as possible. Mm-hmm. And if he were, and the way that he does that is by removing as much friction from the experience of attending a ball game. Like, you know, he brought up small things like the ticketing process and what was the friction there and how do we eliminate that? And, how do we make them want to stay longer? And his submission basically was, car dealers are always talking about how to shorten the experience. We should make it so compelling that people want it. Like, we have to be like, okay, you can go home now. Like,
yes. Well, it's the whole concept of being memorable. I was right. just watching, did you ever watch Undercover Billionaire?
Yes. Yeah.
Grant Cardone season. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I was watching that last night and he walked into a gym that he wanted to serve as a client. And there was these bull riding synthesizers or whatever yeah, you want right. to call them.
Yeah. Robots.
So he gets on and he's a nobody according like to this guy, sure. right? He doesn't know that it's Grant Cardone, and he gets on this bull and he rides it and kind of makes a little bit of a fool of himself, but he gets off and he says, you know, as a tip, be memorable. Like you want, like whether it's laughing or crying, be memorable. You want everyone that you come into contact with to go home to their wife, you know, their kids, their friends and family, and talk about you. Right. So yeah. that, you know, that really relates to the car business. Like if we're taking away your chance at a phone call, like your chance at to call the customer, like, are they going to remember you?
Right.
You know, if we take that experience away and try to just get them to come to the showroom by, you know, a chat conversation, are they going to really know you? So that really is your opportunity to get on the phone and make a memory.
I love it. It ties into where this starts, right? It's, you know, Alva, you had mentioned we're touching them throughout the year. There's a sequence in which we are touching them. And what I find so beautiful and yet so simple is, what a novel idea. Wish somebody a happy birthday.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, so but simple. You're starting them with a memorable experience. Like, oh man, mm-hmm. nobody's ever, mm-hmm. I buy things all the time. Nobody's ever remembered my birthday mm-hmm. or whatever it might be. And I think, you know, what we're talking about is, we are setting you up to succeed. Please, like, just don't screw it up.
Yeah.
We like, just don't screw it up. You have to hit it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's T-ball.
One thing that we've realized throughout the year is that, you know, it's taking a little bit of time for dealers to really get their heads wrapped around what we have. It is really amazing because for the last 25 years, the mentality has not changed. They keep doing the same things over and over again, expecting the same result. And in the meantime, again, they're killing their database. They're causing data fatigue. They're causing fatigue amongst the salespeople, you know, trying to drive more sales and doing the same thing. So, really, we get, you know, we just put a Chrysler dealer who hasn't received top spot in the last 5 years, last month hit number one in the Prairie region. So, you know, this is just a huge accolade. We had the opportunity to celebrate with them as soon as they got their numbers, you know, and we received the phone call. It was like, yes. And our team was just so excited. And, you know, to not be able to get there for 5 years and then, you know, they enlist Ribbit. And then the team takes about 2 weeks to understand, you know, when the messaging goes out, this is how you respond. We train, these are soft touches. We go through the training with them. We guide them all the way through up until launch. And the day of launch is the most exciting day. And then all of a sudden, you know, we just tell them, sit back, put your seatbelt on and hold on because you're in for a ride. We'll wait an hour. You can go get your parts quotes or whatever you need to do. But you're going to be busy, and that they are. You know, and then they start seeing car deals coming from it without having to pick up the phone. You know, how sweet is that as a salesperson?
But this was a dealer that really took ownership, correct?
Yeah, they did.
What do you think they did differently? I wasn't on that account, so I don't know. What do you think they did differently from the accounts that kind of?
Well, I think first of all, when we they made the decision, right, to go ahead. They made a long-term decision to really work with us, and they understood the cumulative approach, that it is a snowball effect. AI is going to have these conversations with customers all the way along their journey. Even if it's 3, 4, 5, 6 months from now, we're going to bring them in when they're ready. So they understood that. Their data was clean. Our integrations department, that was one of the comments. This is really nice data. So their data was a lot cleaner than what we normally see. Wrong numbers, no numbers. You know, how do we reach out to customers who are not, you know, the customer records are stale. But then the team bought in. It's the team that has to buy in and really, really understand when we hand the baton over to them, you know, that they take it and they run with it and they say the proper things. You know, like, we don't talk about events. We want to make sure that that customer feels like that salesperson reached out to that particular individual and only that individual. Although they're reaching out to 10 per hour or however many drops, you know, that salesperson can handle. But then they legitimately have the ability to say, like, yes, I called a handful of people, you know, say for a buyback. Yes, I called a handful of people. Do you mind telling me who you are? Instead of saying, oh, yeah, we have an event going on or we have this automated system calling out. So who are you? There's a big difference on those two different conversations, right? So we make sure that they understand.
They've gone all in.
Yeah, all in. And you know, something that's important is that, like, I guess myself being in the automotive for so long and being a salesperson, when that calendar flips, you're a zero again. You're starting all over again every single month. So there's only so much time in the day, so many days in the month for you to reach your target, your goals, hit your volume bonuses and stuff like that. And, you know, to be able to have this doing the heavy lifting and putting customers in front of them where, you know, they can do their job and sell vehicles. Just got a message from one of the salespeople that, you know, he was kind of he didn't really understand it for the first week or two. And then it clicked and he goes, Ribbit is a moneymaker. Like, what the heck did you guys do? It's, I don't know. I just find it really strange that they don't get it right away. But the ones that buy in, like this dealership, understood it right away. And, you know, again, it's, we're there to support them, coach them, and really make sure that we have a plan for their data. So the data strategy is huge, huge, with most of them not knowing. There's a few dealers. There's like a small handful of dealers who have their data organized, but they a lot of them don't understand the structure and the process of how to bucket them and retarget or re-engage. There's so many different areas that we can pull from, and lost leads, service customers, F&I initiatives, you know, increase the F&I gross profit by sending out a $300 manufacturer bonus to that particular customer who bought a vehicle 6 months ago, and then it doesn't increase the counter in the business office. When I was in there, you handed me a cash deal. It's like, oh, I just lowered my average.
Right.
So,
yeah, it really goes to show, you know, and we see this across so many organizations, which is we bring something in because we like what the promise of that thing is, that software or process or whatever. But it really, to your point, it requires that we go all in. You know, I can even think in our agency, we have certain softwares where I'm like, we're not even scratching the surface of what we could be doing here. And I think, you know, for those listening or watching, that really is the crux of it here. It's A, you know, as a quick recap, AI is as, or any tool is going to be as strong as how deeply you go all in and how you deploy it. And then where you refocus your time, energy, and talents where they're best suited. When you have that combination, boy, oh boy, does magic happen. And certainly that's, you know, we're hearing all about that right now. I have a couple of questions and they're going to be curveballs.
Oh, I'm excited.
They're curveballs because they have nothing to do with anything we've talked about.
Okay.
The first curveball as we wind down here is, where are you? You're in Saskatchewan or Manitoba?
We're in Manitoba.
Manitoba.
Yeah.
What is the, you see, because now that I'm in the United States, I find that I spend a good fraction of my time dispelling Canadian myths.
Yeah.
What is a myth about the prairies of Canada and Manitoba in particular that we just need our American counterparts to understand finally?
That we don't ride buffalo.
What about those polar bears?
Exactly.
Now, isn't there somewhere though in Manitoba where there's tons of polar bears?
In Churchill.
Yeah.
In Churchill. It's actually, I hear it's quite beautiful. And people fly from all over the world.
To come there, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I want to say there's an area up there, Beauséjour. Is that a place in Manitoba?
Beauséjour. That's Beauséjour. Close to Alva.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. So we have all sorts of names. We don't have the Sierra Vista cities and whatever you call them. We got intricate names to cities in Canada. And second question is, what do you love most? Because I got to be honest, I don't even know. I think you two might be number 3 and 4 that I've met from Manitoba. Why did you grow up in Manitoba? Why Manitoba?
Manitoba is one of those places that kind of sucks you in, right? Like, I love it. I love it here. I've lived in LA. I've lived in Paris. And I always swore that I wouldn't end up here, but it has grown a lot over the years and it has so much to offer. I think one of the big misconceptions is that, I think especially when you're a tech company, you want to kind of, or I've heard other tech owners say, oh, I'd never admit you're from Winnipeg.
Right.
You know, on your LinkedIn profile, put yourself in Vancouver. Right. But there's so much that happens here. There's so many great opportunities. Some of the most successful, most connected people that I've met have been from Manitoba. So,
wow.
And it's also Hollywood North. All the
Is
big
it really?
Movies are, yeah. All the big movies are shot here. Yeah.
Wow. I thought it was Vancouver or Toronto.
Oh no, it's become Winnipeg. My husband, he's got this like side gig acting and I'm like, why are you doing this?
He's got this side gig acting. His name's Ryan Reynolds. No big deal. It's fine.
I'll just keep my mouth shut because I'll get in trouble. But yeah, no, there are lots of big movies that are shot here, which is, yeah, surprising, I guess, to some. But
I would have had no clue.
Lots of action here. Yeah.
You know, I love dispelling the Canadian myths. I was at dinner recently with a bunch of our beloved American colleagues. And I don't even know how it came up, but I was like, yeah, isn't it weird to think that the founding fathers all had British accents?
Yeah.
And they all looked at me like they had seen it. They were like, what? What you talking about? Yeah. I was like, no, you knew that. Come on.
Well, you've kind of adopted like an American accent. Like you sound American.
Do I? Yeah. I mean, is it weird that I don't hear the Canadian accent though? There are some tells though. I will tell you, there are some tells when I say pasta, not pasta.
Right.
That is a tell. Right. They're like, you're not from around here.
Yes.
When I spell color with a U, you are. Yeah. They're like, not from here.
Yeah.
What else do I say? I don't know what else I say. I'm sure there's other Canadian.
It's like Toronto never, versus Toronto.
Yeah, Toronto versus.
If you're Canadian, you say Toronto, right? Say Toronto.
Yeah, not Toronto.
That's weird.
Toronto.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
Exactly.
Though, you know, so friends of ours, we went out to dinner 2 weeks ago. Down here in the Dallas area, they have Moxie's, the restaurant Moxie's.
Cool. No way.
Yes. And it is jam packed. Like people are rolling in. It's the same menu, the same food. The food tastes Canadian. Like in other words, it tastes clean and healthy. And we take them there and guess what's on the menu? Poutine.
No way.
And I'm like, gotta.
There you go.
They're like, ew, gravy on fries? Really? And I'm like, bro, you have not lived until you put brown gravy on French fries. They're like, ew, so gross. We left that restaurant. It's been two, three weeks. And they're like, I'm never eating French fries again unless there's gravy on them. And I'm like, I've done my part.
Yeah.
So was this like a Texas size poutine?
No, it's like the menus.
Just regular portions?
Yeah, just regular portions. The menu's the same. The food tastes the same.
Wow.
We know where we're going, Kira.
The bottom says proudly Canadian or something like that. And I was like,
who would have thought? That's awesome. Nazis. Good to hear.
Bringing poutine to America. There you go.
You guys just need Salisbury House there now.
Salisbury House? Wait,
Sal's.
Is that a place? I don't feel like I had that in British Columbia.
No, it's like a slightly lower end, I would say. Lower end Moxie's.
Yeah.
Is it like, that's like how I refer to Alberta as extremely northern Texas?
Yes.
Yeah, gotcha.
Exactly.
Hey, listen, this has been so much fun. I'm so excited that we got to connect and talk about Ribbit and ways that dealers can utilize AI. Alva, Kira, thanks so much for joining me on the Dealer Playbook. How can those listening get in touch with you and learn more?
They can head over to ribbit.ai. That's our website. Or they can send us an email to info@ribbit.ai.
Very cool. And are you on LinkedIn or do you have the socials?
Yes.
What's your...
Yep.
So we can connect with you, both of you on LinkedIn.
I have no idea what my direct link is. Kira Fogg, F-O-G-G.
It's not Kirafog 179463/.
It could be.
Well, if you just look up Kirafog, you'll find her on LinkedIn. Alva, pronounce your last name again, Alva.
Seno. Alva Seno.
See, I would have got her wrong. I would have butchered it right out of the gates. Thank you so much for joining me on the Dealer Playbook podcast.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you for having us. So much fun. Thanks, Michael.
I'm Michael Cirillo, and you've been listening to the Dealer Playbook podcast. If you haven't yet, please click the subscribe button wherever you're listening right now. Leave a rating or review and share it with a colleague. Thanks for listening.